He wants technology advancements.
NATO and Afghanistan.
The Vinograd Report.
Elections in Serbia.
Iran has joined 10 other countries having the technology to send satellites into space. The news was carried on Monday by major wire services and other international media outlets. Our scientists and aerospace engineers have also succeeded in building a ground-based satellite facility with original technology for guiding satellites and satellite launching rockets. The launch of Kavushkar Explorer 1 marked a unique development phase in the Islamic Republic's aerospace industry. Experts are also working to finalize the program to send Iran's first research satellite, Omid, Hope, into orbit. It is believed that the mission will be undertaken by Safir Envoy rocket in the future this year. As President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad gave the order for the rocket's launch, he said, "We witnessed today that Iran has taken its first step in space very firmly, precisely, and with awareness." He said in a reference to the West that the evil and dominant system's most important instrument is humiliating people and nations by making them think that they are incapable. Though the designing, production, and test of the first Iranian satellite and its launcher are great accomplishments for the nation, the will, dedication, and self-confidence of our scientists and engineers are of greater significance. Such uncompromising belief and commitment, as highlighted by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, can and will be the essence of future breakthroughs in key scientific and other areas. A glance at our scientific achievements in the past decade demonstrates that Iran is on its way to join world leaders in the field of science and technology, including medical scientists to help fight AIDS and diabetes. Iranian scientists have in the past made their mark in stem cell research by cloning the sheep, Royona. In the field of nuclear energy, our scientists have done an outstanding job and are fast moving ahead with regard to producing nuclear fuel despite the non-stopping Western intimidation and threats. In the premier aerospace sector, the nation now has access to modern technology for launching its own rockets and satellites. This is a major step forward, more so because the technology has been developed with original knowledge. Hardly half a century has passed when some powers claimed that Iranians are unable even to manage their Abadan oil refinery in southern Khuzestan province. Over the past three decades, we have not only come a long way in proving the imperialists wrong, but also made progress in key areas. True, we too, like other countries, including the advanced states, are facing problems and challenges. But then, in today's world, there can no more be something for nothing. And as the ancient saying goes, need is the mother of all inventions.
U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on a surprise visit to Afghanistan alongside British Foreign Secretary David Miliband brushed aside the mounting evidence that U.S.-led military attempts to subdue Afghanistan have failed. U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates expressed disillusionment last Thursday with some members of the NATO alliance's failure to contribute combatants to the mission and called on them to more robustly aid the cause. Speaking in general terms, his remarks were directed at Germany, which has refused to put its troops in combat roles. In Afghanistan, as in Iraq, the strongest U.S. partner has been Britain. But then again, realistically speaking, Afghanistan's current problems are just the leftover symptoms of an earlier British colonial disease. Another major setback for the NATO mission is Canada's threat to pull its soldiers from the southern Afghan city of Kandahar on schedule next February, unless other NATO nations provide an extra 1,000 troops there. The increasing Canadian combat troop fatality toll has even forced Canada to send senior officials to Paris to consult the French government on a possible offer of support. Kandahar province in southern Afghanistan is often called the former Taliban stronghold by the Western press, but that tag cannot be further from the truth. Taliban controls the high ground in southern Afghanistan and moves about at will, probing the myriads of weaknesses in the NATO forces' lines. In fact, it is the Taliban forces that choose when and where to engage the NATO military, and the Taliban fighters have gradually been seizing the initiative away. Going even further, a growing number of NATO member countries argue that the United States puts too much emphasis on the military aspects in Afghanistan. Afghanistan has never in its entire history been subdued militarily for any significant length of time. The country appears from the outside to breed battle-ready, hardened men by the millions. But the latter is also not a fair assessment, since the way to Afghanistan's heart is actually through peaceful negotiations and economic bartering with the numerous overlords that control different regions. The so-called warlords are each kings within their lands in their own right, and thus a united kingdom brought about through negotiation is the way ahead. However, such eventuality has only ever borne fruit through local initiatives, free of Western influence. As a man who played an instrumental role in ejecting the former Soviet forces from Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai must be aware that even the mightiest of foreign armies cannot guarantee anything in the country, and thus, the Afghan president must place his faith in local regional solutions reached via delicate consensuses with provincial overlords.
Ehud Olmert finally took full responsibility for his humiliating defeat in the 33-day war on Lebanon in 2006. In a special parliamentary session to study the final report of the Vinograd Committee, the Premier said his plans and policies during the military attacks were misguided. However, all cabinet members of the Zionist regime, he stressed, were involved in making decisions related to the fighting against the poorly armed Hezbollah, which were later ratified by the parliament. Throughout the months after the fighting ended, political and military officials of the occupying power tried to avoid taking responsibility for the exceptional setback that broke the myth of the Israeli invincibility. The Vinograd report, among other things, revealed that both military and non-military officials at the highest level of Tel Aviv were responsible for all that went wrong and exposed the regime's weakness to the world. Olmert, who until the recent past said the war was a victory for Israel, got a rough ride in the Knesset last Monday. It was not his words that shook the meeting, but rather the painful pause when relatives of soldiers killed in the campaign erupted his words with tearful accusations. In the plenum, Olmert took several moments to recover and appeared visibly shaken. Before attacking Lebanon in the summer of 2006, the heavily armed Israeli army was busy training and preparing for the fighting with full support from the United States and Britain. Many Arab politicians and pundits believed that the unprovoked war on Lebanon was masterminded by the embattled Bush regime as part of its so-called Greater Middle East initiative. They believed hastily planned visits by Condi Rice to occupy Palestinians in the first days of the conflict were a sign that America and the Zionists were busy planning a full-fledged victory that simply never came to pass. Under the circumstances, Olmert's admittance, though late and reluctant, will definitely make the situation worse for the occupied prime minister and his fractured regime, already taking a lot of heat at home for unnecessarily increasing the violence and tensions in occupied Gaza. Undoubtedly, given his fast declining popularity, Olmert will not be able to compensate for the huge losses coming from the Lebanon war. Failure of the formidable Zionist army, which loves to place itself as one of the world's best, was a result of the strong will, determination, and self-confidence of the Lebanese people, who displayed outstanding valor and courage against the Israeli military and its U.S.-made offensive arsenal. One of all the things the Vinograd report exposed, it is not surprising that it avoided mentioning one simple truth. Fate and toughness of the Lebanese Hezbollah fighters knocked some sense into the minds of those intoxicated with power.
The re-election of Boris Tadic as Serbian president means that when Kosovo declares independence as expected in the next few weeks, the underlying political reaction in Belgrade will not match the public fury, especially that led by Tadic's defeated nationalist rival, Tomislav Nikolic, deputy leader of the hardline Serbian Radical Party, the SRP. Tadic campaigned on the slogan, "Vote Kosovo and the EU." He could have done no less. Had he wavered in his rejection of Kosovan independence, he would very probably have lost the election. As it is, he will be mindful that Nikolic's pro-Russian and vehemently anti-Kosovar platform attracted 47% of voter support. The SRP has vowed to take steps if the government now peacefully accepts Kosovo's breakaway. But Tadic knows that for him to take Serbia toward EU membership, he will have to confine himself to angry verbal protests in the face of Kosovo's unilateral declaration of independence. He will also need to step up the hunt for Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic and his military henchman Ratko Mladic. The prize of EU membership will be the economic transformation that will overtake the country, hopefully bolstering and completing the free market reforms that were put in place during his first administration. Kosovo, though an emotive issue, was probably not decisive because voters around the world tend to vote first and foremost for their pocketbooks, and most Serbs are deeply wary of 20 years of bitter confrontation with neighbors and the international community. Then there is, of course, a hidden carrot within EU membership. Given Brussels' largely removed internal borders and long-term aim of political unity, the time will come when Kosovo, either by itself or in partnership with Albania, will also be admitted to the EU, along with Macedonia. At that point, any Serbian claim to Kosovo will have become nugatory. Everyone will be a European. The Serbs should be reminded that though its original format was economic, the impetus has always been political, in that the EU's founders were determined to create a political system that would stop European powers from ever again going to war. The same aim must attend the expansion of the EU into the rest of the Balkans, to bring an end to conflict by establishing economic prosperity and permanent political dialogue. Tadic's re-election was a victory for the forces of moderation. There are 5 years of Tadic's second and last presidential term ahead for the process to be advanced as close as possible, if not actually, to Serbian accession.